when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, I sure hope you've been hanging on. I sure hope all of y'all have been tuned in since the first hour. But just in case you haven't tuned in since the first hour, we have Paul English. We've been so excited to get him in. We're so fortunate to have him in. Just in case, like you say, you're tuning in, Paul English, he's the audio voice for the book. He's the voice for the audio book, Hellstorm, that great book written by Tom, a.k.a. Mike Goodrich. And like I said, Mike, if you keep him in your prayers, because he had a stroke back in August, and I hope he's continued to heal up, but he's not quite ready to come on yet. But Paul English, he's like a walking encyclopedia, especially with anything to do German, with Dresden. What we've been talking about, people, to kind of bring you up to speed, we're going to get to the bombing of Dresden soon, but we can't just go into the bombing. We're telling you why Dresden's, why the German people were hated with such a vitriolic, satanic level of hatred. And we've been talking about how the German people, a fellow in England, one of the English muckety-mucks, like Paul said, he said that the strength of Germany comes from the strength of the German people, their brilliance, their hardy, healthy mental mind and body, their work ethic, their righteousness. They were a God-fearing country. Matter of fact, I've always thought that one of the reasons that the international, the globalists, so to speak, the reason they hate Germany so bad is because Martin Luther came there. The great, the great Protestant revolution, in which I am a follower of Martin Luther. I think he hit it right on the money. But Hitler and the Germans, they pulled Germany out of, this is kind of a review of what we've been talking about. Germany was an absolute disaster basket case, just as the South was after Lincoln's War. That's the way Germany was after the first war of the international bankers, war that had declared on Germany, as Monica well pointed out. Actually, World War One and World War Two, to quote, I believe it was Tom Goodrich, he said, actually, World War One and World War Two could be more accurately termed World War A and World War B. It was the same war. It never stopped. Monica called it the 30-year war. She was pretty much right on the money. But that war was declared against Germany. The Germany, like I said, was a horrible basket case. People were starving to death. The German, because of the Versailles Treaty that was laid on them, a prostate Germany that could not resist. That Versailles Treaty that demanded that Germany, they were working day and night just to pay reparations to these international bankers that started the war in the first place. And we talked about some of the things we talked about. We talked about Hitler and his great economic system. And Paul English talked about this book, Hitler's Revolution. He says probably one of the best he knows about, that talks about the Germans, the history of World War One, World War Two, War A, War B, the economic system. Anything you want to know about, that'd be a great book. That's Hitler's Revolution by Richard Tedor. It's Richard Tedor. He talked about that, and we talked about why the international bankers and the globalists hated Germans so bad. We started World War II again, and we're giving you all the reasons. Like I said, I'm probably repeating myself. Why the globalists hated Germany so bad, and why they wanted to unleash this incredible hell of us incendiary bombing on the city of Germany, the city of Dresden. To quote, if I remember right, Tom Goodrich said that every single city of any size in Germany was bombed, but none any worse than Dresden. And this fact, before I shut up, Dresden, there were more people killed in those fire bombings, in the high explosive bombings in Dresden, than there was killed by the atomic bombs in Hiroshima or Nagasaki. So, in other words, in a summary, the international bankers hated the Germans like the international bankers hated the Southern people. There was an intentional genocide against the Germans, just like there was an intentional genocide against the Southern people, because basically by the same damn enemy. And we'll go back to you, Paul. I was just trying to bring our audience with my feeble ability up to the point of where we are right now. So go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, you know, there's obviously a lot that can be said about Dresden and the bombing days, these 3 days, the 13th, 14th and 15th of February that year. But to understand why all that took place, and not just those events, but the whole of that conflict from late 39 through to 45, is the key bit. People didn't just decide to start killing one another for fun. There were reasons, and they're always economic. They're always about economic control and somebody not wanting anybody else to have more than them, or whatever language we want to use. It doesn't really matter whether we describe it accurately or not. We see the behavior over and over again repeated. And this is the most intense version that we've had of it. I mean, that said, we're involved in a world war right now. It doesn't look, it hasn't got planes flying overhead bombing us just yet, although that seems to be happening on a selective basis in the Ukraine right now. But these principles of people wanting control at any cost, as long as it's not their lives and yours, they're all for that. And they've been all for that for a long time. So that's really what happened, you know, or the run-up really to this whole thing with Dresden. Is you've got this situation where... Yeah, sorry, Monica. Yeah.
No, speak. I don't mean to interrupt if you were just in wanting to go on with that thought. I just had something to... interject, and what Eddie was talking about, more people dying in Dresden than in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But like you had said in the break, Paul, earlier, no, not according to official numbers. And I can tell you that it was either 2017 or 2018 when Alfred, my brother, was in Dresden for their annual commemoration, you know, for those who are trying to tell the truth, they do go there to honor the dead and, you know, tell the truth about what happened there. And then after their own gathering, they attended an official graveside gathering or a memorial side gathering that the officials had, like the actual city councillors or whatnot. And they had the audacity to talk about the 25,000 dead. And I think that's on an order of probably 1/20th of the true numbers. Nobody will ever really know the true numbers, how many died, but it could be up to 500,000. And because it was so full of refugees and whatnot, and fleeing injured and old and young and women and children and whatnot. But maybe it was 300,000. We don't really know, but it could have been 500,000. But they say 25,000. Okay, so 25,000 is what they say. And then top that off with, they had the audacity in whoever was giving a speech there at the official memorial to say, oh yes, but after that first night of bombing, the Nazis rounded up the remaining Jews in the city and, you know, rounded them up and transported them away to the death camps. Like, so in other words, they're deflecting once again from the Germans are not allowed to grieve their own losses. And then even while they are trying to grieve, you know, 1/10th or 1/20th of the German losses, like diminishing, they will deflect the attention and make it like, well, it's their own fault anyway, because, you know, they're so evil. And then they started rounding up the rest of the Jews, as if that's what the Germans who were just firebombed and stuck in the pavement and or suffocating in their bunkers because it was such an intense heat, as if they were thinking about rounding up the rest of the Jews and, you know, to these fictitious death camps anyway. I mean, the camps were there. I'm not saying they were fictitious, but the gas chambers, that's the fictitious part. So this is how it goes with the officialdom, how they are rewriting the history. So not only do the German people get so attacked and flattened and scorched and burnt and bombed, but then they are not allowed to even grieve their own losses. I think that is just on another whole level. So they get the guilt trip then of the guilt of having committed this, you know, murder of 6 million Jews in the gas chambers, which didn't happen. And on top of it, they are not allowed to grieve their own losses. And then on top of that, the guilt. I mean, I can go on and on. Like, it's just, it's double, triple, quadruple of a crime. So it's not just the fact that they were so viciously attacked and that millions of Germans died in this war that they can't even commemorate. They can't even grieve their own. Sorry, Paul, I interrupted with a rather long interruption.
No, you didn't interrupt. It's a extremely valid point. You know, you talked about this thing about German guilt even to this day. Although every now and again I've seen comments from people, from Germans, who suddenly have the bingo moment when they see the real history. There was a wonderful one a few years. I mean, I don't have these things in front of me, but I remember reading one from a young girl. She said, I think she was 19 or 20 at the time, and she'd read something which really opened her eyes to the history of her people. And she said for years she'd been depressed and thought, we're the most evil people that ever lived, you know, because every newspaper says this. And I now see that that is not the case. And it was a great burden off her. And these things are important because it's how the demoralization is maintained, by maintaining this bogus
guilt. We've got to go to a quick break on that point, Paul. We'll be right back after this commercial break. Hang on to your seats, people.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Small Business Tech Guys is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguys.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguys.com.
Tell you something, boy, if I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Dear Blood River Radio family, our dear white Christian family, thank you for holding on. I'm going to interject this, but I don't want to get our guests off track. I'm just going to interject this comment. The American Southerners, we are double first cousins with the Germans. I've always said, and going back, the Confederate soldiers were double first cousins with the German Waffen-SS. To quote a former G. Gordon Liddy, who I used to admire, he went to prison. He got on the wrong side. He was with the FBI. He was slated to be, they say, the takeover J. Edgar Hoover's place with the FBI. But he had to go to federal prison for 7 years. G. Gordon Liddy was a great admirer of the German soldier. He said that nobody killed like the Waffen-SS. He said they were the greatest, most highly skilled soldiers in history. Nobody was better. Well, I've always said that we were double first cousins. I just said that with the German people. And the same way the Germans have been punished over and over and over for over 100 years now, Miss Monica, my sister, said that the Germans were not even allowed to mourn their dead. Well, same thing, dittos here in the United States. Our statues have been being torn down. Our statues honoring our great Southern warriors, our great Southern dead. I was just telling Paul that I live here in Memphis, Tennessee, where we had one of the greatest generals in history of anybody's army, General Nathan Bedford Forrest. His great statue, unable to be reproduced anymore because we don't have craftsmen like that. All those craftsmen are dead. We don't have any more. The statue had to be removed. The graves were dug up. They're tearing down statues all over the United States. I was in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017 with our brothers when they tore down the Lee statue there in Charlottesville, Virginia, where all the great presidents were. More presidents were born in Virginia than any other place. And then Miss Nancy was telling us about, she'd been informing us about, in Arlington National Cemetery, they're bringing down one of the greatest statues in the United States. This honors the Confederate dead. Now, when will they start digging their graves up? People, that's just an aside. I didn't want to go off on that too much, but I just wanted to know there's so many similarities between the war that Satan declared against the South and Satan declared against our brothers and sisters in Germany. Back to you, Paul.
Well, we talked about buildings earlier on, architecture being destroyed because it was beautiful, which is one of the great ways in which our people have expressed themselves. You know, you could make everything a shed if you wanted to, but we choose not to because there's some added value. It's an indication of where our fingers are pointing, which is to heaven, generally. There's a quote from George Orwell, which you may be familiar with, which addresses just what you were saying, Eddie, which is the most effective way to destroy people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of their history. And this is going on with you in the southern part of America, but America as a whole. It's going on here in England and across Europe. And if it carries on, and it may well carry on, the people in 100 years' time will think that there weren't any English people that built anything and that it was a bunch of other people that built it and did all these things. It's bizarre. People go, no, that can't be right. But you can see it happen. It's happening in front of our eyes because people are not reminded of or are paying attention to the really important salient details of who they are as a people. And, of course, one of the big weapons at the moment is you don't want to be called a racist, whatever that might be. You don't want to be called one of them. So nobody even uses the word race. They're not even thinking, as it were, in terms of racially distinctive groups, which is a massive error. And that's understatement. That's an English understatement. It's a bit more than an error. It's devastating. It's going to bring about hell. And, so we talk about the demonization of Hitler because of his focus on race. I think one of the things he wrote is that the most precious thing you've got, the most valuable asset, I'm paraphrasing here, is your own people. And that goes for whichever race you're in. It absolutely is. Because those people are operating on the same wavelength, they're vibrating at the same frequency as you. You'll still have a lot of disputes with them, no doubt, right? But you've got a basic sort of contextual understanding for where the line is in so many areas. It's so subtle and it's so vast. That's how it works. What are we facing in the world today with the current onslaught? The obliteration of races, the obliteration of cultures, and the obliteration of Germany was definitely part of the plan back then because they were distinctively championing the very things that we as a race, and I would suggest probably other races, although it's down to them, but that we as a race require. We require these things. These are necessary. They're not an option. We have to be racially separate from other people, and that way we can be who we were designed to be, and we can be and have been of great value both to ourselves and other people when we're left like that. But of course, this invalidates the globalist idea, and it invalidates, you know, because most of their ideas are completely bogus and easy to invalidate, but they hold them in place by force, corruption, deception, and the main pivot point, as we mentioned earlier, is their control of the bank. Whilst they retain control of the bank, nearly all of our efforts in all other spheres are going to come to nothing because we will be overwhelmed by their purchasing power in due course. And it's this, I feel. And don't ask me exactly how we do it. I tried a few years ago and it all turned out rather bad because I was very green. But that's really what needs to be done because, you know, as I said earlier, 1776 to 1860, sovereign individuals in America living as close back under common law and under God as you've seen for a long time. In England, it happened after Alfred the Great, and during that period, it took quite a few hundred years before we had the English Civil War, so-called, but it wasn't. It was the same sort of scam. It was the same scam. The same thing again.
That's a really good history lesson there, Paul. You know,
yes,
coming back to the word racist or race, like, there's a reason why that is probably the most weaponized of all the weaponized words, and there are many. But that really is about the most weaponized label, and everybody quickly says, oh, no, no, I'm not racist if they're called that. And that's the one we have to just go, bingo, that's the one we have to look at. Why is it the most weaponized? I mean, we live in an inverted world, so really we should pay attention to why that one is so weaponized, so forbidden, so you can't be that thing. Aha, okay, that should tell us something. Perhaps it is because it is the most important thing that we have. And like you said, the quote from Hitler, and, you know, why are organizations that have the word blood and honor or blood and soil, those are like, oh, they're terrorist organizations. No, because these organizations actually recognize the importance of maintaining our race. And I do want to say something about that, that it's not just about maintaining our race, but, you know, when desegregation happened in the United States, for instance, the black people did not fare better. No, their communities suffered greatly. And I have a really good friend who explained all this to me, and he had really studied this. And it was just such an eye-opener for me when he explained some of the statistics and some of the facts around that, for example, when the black people were living largely in their own communities, they actually had, on the whole, you know, relatively intact families. They, you know, sure, they had some broken families and whatnot, but then when the desegregation happened and they were all mixed up and quite forcefully that, you know, blacks were bused to white schools and whites were bused into black district, and they started living in each other's communities. Well, the black communities really suffered because their best and brightest left them, because they were smart enough to know that, oh, living amongst the white communities is actually healthier and cleaner and better, and, you know, there were greater opportunities for them there. And so the black communities lost their brighter ones, the brightest ones, and they were left to basically fend for themselves, and then their single parent headed families just skyrocketed, and they didn't do so well anymore. So really, it's good for all races to keep, it's birds of a feather flock together. This is a very natural thing in nature. It's God's law. It's natural law. No matter what anybody says about it, that is actually natural, that birds of a feather flock together. It's a good expression. And if we forcefully change that and mix everybody up together, well, it hurts everybody. That's what I want to say. That's my main point there. It hurts everybody. Mm-hmm. Over to one of you. Oh, sounds like music.
We got to go to a break, and believe it or not, I cannot believe it's going that fast. People, we have to go to our second break of the second hour. We'll be right back as soon as this break is over.
The land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Dave Collins. Stop flying over Alaska. That's the message from a U.S. senator.
Recovery efforts are underway in Alaska after the U.S. military shot down an unidentified object Friday. Reporter Ali Rafa.
President Biden calling this mission to take this aircraft down a success yesterday, but White House officials are admitting that at this point they have way more questions than answers. They still don't know exactly where this object came from, who it belonged to.
President Biden gave the order to shoot it down, saying it posed a reasonable threat to civilian air traffic. The incident comes after a Chinese surveillance balloon was shot down last week near the coast of South Carolina. I'm John Schaefer.
The CDC is adding the COVID vaccine to routine immunization schedules for kids and adults. It joins the flu, polio, measles, mumps, and rubella and other shots. However, that doesn't mean the CDC is making the shot mandatory for children. Three people suffered injuries after a United Airlines jet traveling from Newark to Tampa experienced turbulence. The flight took off from Newark Liberty Airport. While in the air, the 757 encountered what United called unexpected turbulence. On landing at Tampa International Airport, two passengers and a flight attendant were taken to local hospital for evaluation. So what does KC Chief quarterback Patrick Mahomes have to say to young people as he heads to the Super Bowl tomorrow?
Yeah, I would say keep following your dreams no matter what anyone says. No one thought I was going to be a professional football player. I had people telling me to focus on baseball and not play football, and I followed my dream, and I'm sitting here today, so follow your dreams.
Disneyland officials are announcing that the reopening of Mickey's Toontown will be delayed by 2.5 weeks. The cartoon-themed section of the park will now welcome back guests on March 19th. The delay was caused by heavy windstorms that impacted construction momentum. This is USA News.
Attention, small business owners. This could be the most important 10-minute call you will ever make. You may be eligible to receive up to $26,000 per employee through the Employee Retention Credit. Call Omega Accounting Solutions to see if your business is eligible to recover payroll tax pay during the pandemic. All it takes is a quick, easy, free 10-minute consultation to determine your qualifications. Call Omega Accounting Solutions at 800-309-ERC. Omega's knowledgeable staff will streamline the process of filing complicated paperwork. Omega is the small business champion with teams dedicated to maximizing tax credits. CPAs even turn to Omega for ERC guidance. Take advantage of this exclusive small business tax credit before it's too late. The 3-year sunset deadline is setting soon. So find out if you qualify today. Call 800-309-ERC. That's 800-309-ERC. Or visit OmegaTaxCredits.com.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, I cannot believe this time is going so fast. We only have about 26 minutes left. But we have Paul English on. We're getting ready to go back to Paul English. I believe he's going to talk about the nuts and bolts of the bombing of Dresden. After all, this is Dresden month. It's part of the everything German month. And we're talking about that great book written by. By the way, I would like to plug that book. People, if you would, I wish you would go and get that book. It's the... I'm just there to talk about it all night. Hellstorm.
Hellstorm.
The great book, Hellstorm. Correct. You ought to get that book. I have the movie, and I can highly recommend it. And it is really hard to watch. It took me 2 or 3 days. But I'll say this, people. Our American people, especially you Southern Baptists out there, you need to get this, and you need to see it was hell. I don't know how really hell is spoken of without the Holy Bible, how it could be any worse. than what happened to people in Dresden. So get that book. Get that book, Hellstorm, by Tom Goodrich there. Also, you can get the audio book. And they're like we talked about, the voice of the audio book is the fellow we have on tonight, Paul English. So
and another
we're going back to you.
Just before you go back to Paul, I'll just say that another book that Thomas Goodrich wrote is called Summer 1945, subtitle Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. So that's another one that is really important. And I would advise people, it's not bedtime reading. It would be daytime or morning reading, because if you turn it into bedtime reading, you will not sleep. It's very difficult. It's very hard to read, but it is important to know about these things, because we are living in a world which, because they got away with what they did and then the deceptions and lies about World War II, they've got away with, it's the same perpetrators of 9/11 and then the same perpetrators of the current genocide that's being carried out against humanity. So anyway, but over to Paul now. So I just have to interject.
That's a magnificent point. And like, that's a great, great point. You tying it together. I'd like to make this last comment. People, we're right now closer to all that thermonuclear war that could destroy the entire world than we have been since the Cuban crisis. And about 1961, I remember that when the Russians put the missiles with nuclear warheads into Cuba, we came very, very close to all-out nuclear war there. We're getting pretty daggum close now, and by the same people for the same reasons. With that aside,
but Eddie, I'm talking about the COVID cost. The COVID cost, you know, the COVID Holocaust is what I was talking about. You know, it's being carried out. People dying suddenly. This is what I was actually talking about. But of course, there is hot war going on. Like Paul pointed out, there's hot war going on in the Ukraine.
Yes.
But it's this COVID cost that's going on right now as we speak. So, but anyway, now over to Paul. We'll give you a chance yet.
No. These things are all part of the same thread. We're talking about different forms of the same conflict, the same issue, the same impasse in things. And of course, the form that it took in World War II was one of bombs and of bullets and of firebombing in particular. And of course, coming back to Hellstorm, I don't plug it that often. I don't know why. I suppose it's because it's just, I'm so familiar with it, having read it, you know, a couple of times and then narrated it and all that kind of stuff. But I've just got my copy out here again as you were talking about it, and I've got one with the old cover on, which I don't know what that might mean to people, but I've got one 2014, the copy. The cover is quite grim, but it doesn't really indicate how grim it's going to get when you read it. And I would recommend people to read it or to watch it. If you read it, it will be a longer and more involved process, obviously, but you'll have a fuller and much more detailed picture, because it's a very exacting account. It's so exacting that it's not, you won't feel good about reading it. I remember, I've said this before, I think, Eddie, when I've been on previous programs, I read it in the summer of 2014, which seems like an awful long time ago now, because Tom sent me a copy and he wrote a kindly little note on the foreword there to me, which was wonderful. And I had to go walking around the garden every sort of half an hour to catch breath and put the book down. I can read for hours if I need to, but I didn't really want to read this for hours. I can't describe it. It's horrific. And of course, the reason it's so chilling is that it is just an account of horrific things. And gives it this telling and truly tragic and terrifying sort of appeal. I mean, to think that people could be dealt with in this particular way. And so it's the mental process behind this. You know, people here around the microphones here, and most of those people listening, I assume, are not the sorts of people that wake up in the morning and go, wouldn't it be good to drop a nuclear bomb on someone? But there are people apparently on the earth right now who are thinking like this. No one has any idea really why. I don't know even if they do. There's so many good reasons to not do these stupid bits of behavior, but they've obviously got some that they do want to do. And here we are looking at Dresden in 1945. And it's the manner of the sort of massed air raid executions, which is what it were, is chilling. That they waited intentionally for, they would have one wave go in and everybody would think it's finished and over for the day, and they would come out, and then they knew that. They knew they were going to do that, and an hour later, another wave of bombers would come in. They used special high incendiary devices. There was an account here on TV some years ago. I've forgotten the name of the soldier. He's probably still alive. I think the last time I looked, he was an Englishman, and he'd been in the army, in the regular army, prior to the war. And of course, if I could recall his name, it would make this story so much more weighty, but I can't at the moment. I'm sorry. And he was on breakfast TV over here about 10 years ago. And he'd signed up in 1936. So before the outbreak of any hostilities anywhere, he was like going to be a regular army guy. And then he fought throughout the entire war, and he'd fought through Italy and everything. And he got captured somewhere in northern Italy. And he was in Dresden when the bombing happened.
Wow.
And along with his mate Chalky or somebody like that.
Wow.
And he said at one point during this interview, he said, look, I was a professional soldier. He said, out of the 60 guys that signed up with me, there's only six of us made it right through to the end. The others all died. He said, and I've seen a lot of death, and I've seen a lot of dead people. And so what? We're at war, and that's it. You can't go around fretting about it. You go, here's a dead body. There's a dead body. I killed that one. We've got to move on. Otherwise, you're dead. You know, that's how you begin to think. I'm whatever. And he said, so I was quite battle-hardened, and he was. You could tell. He's a guy who'd seen a lot of bad stuff. And he said it didn't make any difference to me, because that's the way he sorted himself out. He kept himself like that. But he said, when I went to Dresden, he said that was just completely out of order. He said, we were in this place. My mate went to the door. He got sucked out by the thing and just instantaneously ignited because of the heat. He said, I saw women and children just explode. Just explode on the railway lines from the heat all around them. There was nothing that they could do. He said, you can't, you know, because the interviewers were saying, what was it like? He said, I don't know what you want me to say. He said that. He said, do you want me to go on? He said, I can't. He said, for normal people, he said, you can't imagine what it's like. He said, it's just, he said, I didn't laugh. I didn't laugh for 40 years after that. He said, I didn't laugh. He said, I didn't find anything amusing or humorous or interesting in life after that. And
that's chilling.
A long, long time.
It's chilling to the bones.
It is. And the interviewers were quite liking the way he was talking about things. And then he was very damning, which was very of Churchill and Eden and these others. And he said they need to be in a place like that to know what they did. He said, because it's completely that what that was. He said that wasn't war. That's not war. What's that? It's disgusting. It is absolutely wretched and disgusting. So we don't know about divine retribution, how it all works out. I know many people claim that they do, but I'm going to slightly put it to one side. I'm sure there are many, many things that are going to surprise us along our life paths. But seriously, there needs to be retribution for things like that. This is out of order. Of course, we've got psychiatrists now to tell us why. Well, you know, he was beaten as a child, and this way he blew up 500,000 people, you know, in Dresden and everything. But it doesn't really add up. And so I don't know quite how it works out. It's a judgment beyond me. But, yeah, I just thought I would mention that, because that's, in many ways, there are not many people left that have survived that. He'll be 98, 99. Maybe he's past 100 by now. I've not seen any obituary to him.
Yeah, he must be very past lucid, 100. If he signed up in 1936 and he was already of age to be a soldier.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
People, that's the signal for our last break. We have to take our last break for this hour. People, dear Blood River Radio audience, please hold on. We'll be right back with Paul English and Monica Schaefer after this last break.
A Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, sadly to say, we've come to the very last segment of the second hour with Paul English. We'll have to let him go after this last segment. But we've been talking about all things German history. Like I said, I'd just like to remind you that February, every year, February is going to be all German, all Germany, Adolf Hitler. It's going to be about the Holocaust. It's going to be what Eisenhower, that sorry satanic scum, did along with the Morgenthau Plan, all that in place, what they did to the poor prostate German people. They took tens of thousands of German soldiers that were honorable. They fought honorably all the way through the war. They fought the British. They fought the Americans. They fought the Russians. And they thought when they would surrender that they saw all was lost. They thought they would at least be given treatment if deserving of to any human being. But you know, well, I'm getting too emotional, y'all, so it just breaks my heart. And I agree with Rich Hamblin, our brother Rich Hamblin. I rode to Charlottesville. Me and Rich Hamblin, our brotherhood was burned in the fires of Charlottesville in 2017. And he said this is the best show he's ever heard Blood River Radio do. So back to you, Paul. I'm getting kind of teary-eyed.
Yeah, it's understandable. We all have little points that make that happen in us, don't we? You don't know. Sometimes you get surprised by what it is that moves you. By the way, just going back to what I was talking about prior to the break, the gentleman I was talking about, he has passed, actually. He's called Victor Gregg, Gregg, and he died in November 2021 at 101. He was 101. So his testimony, I've got it on recording somewhere, is well worth listening to this 8 or 10 minutes on British TV. It's quite a thing. You get the impact of it, really, from someone who was there and survived it, but as we know, many did not, and who would expect them to with that kind of onslaught going on? And I think it's also indicative of the lengths to which they will go to ensure that they get their way, We're completely and utterly secondary in all of this. And I think, you know, there's something in the communication space that I keep thinking about. I don't know quite what the answer is, but we're kind of stuck communications-wise. I was talking to someone the other day about an aspect of World War II, and I could see them glazing over almost instantaneously after about 10 seconds. Because their view of it is the view molded by the mainstream media. And we have we need like some magic powder or something. How do you get the scales off their eyes? To go back to the quote you were using right at the beginning, Eddie, in the opening prayer. How is that to be done? What tools can we use? Are there better ways of doing it? It's not, although I know a great deal about certain aspects of it, and there are people who know way more than me, you come to a point where you think, is this a question about amassing huge quantities of detailed knowledge about these situations? Or is it really what we actually need is like a magic hammer to hit people in the head so that their brains start to work properly? Why is it that people like us ask questions about these things and are disturbed with the answers that we get? Because we begin to see a different world more clearly, more grown up for the first time. And other people never ask a question about anything. That's what kind of worries me. And I think the COVID thing has illustrated this tremendously as well. The sheer bovine complicity of vast quantities of people of our own race is alarming. It's always been a sort of phrase prior to this, but now that it's up and running, it's been alarming. And now, of course, they want to blame other people. It's like watching a very, very slow-motion train wreck, and you're going, couldn't you figure this out? I mean, it's not rocket science, but it obviously is to some people. It's obviously literally beyond them. There's like a component missing. There's something that should be in their head that should work, that's been switched off, removed, doesn't work, they don't even know it exists. There's no introspection or questioning of authority. None. This is it's alarming. What word do you want me to use? We're going to run out of adjectives. It's an extremely dangerous situation. And it means that mobs can be corralled and used against one another. And hey-ho, that's exactly what's taking place.
When you say, Paul, that it's not a matter of showering people with facts, I think you're right, because people get swayed emotionally. So, yeah, what is the solution to that? I guess the epitome of the indoctrination, the reprogramming of the brains, appears when we see young women who have taken off their clothing on their upper body, and they have painted onto their bare breasts the words, "Do it again, Bomber Harris." And this would be in Germany, in Dresden, which is just the saddest thing ever. These young Aryan women, German women, who are saying, "Do it again, Bomber Harris." They know nothing about what really happened.
They know nothing.
And when the listener, in case you don't know, Bomber Harris was, I don't really know that the details, but he was one of the main bombers, I guess, in that bombing raid on Dresden from the Brits, right? So
yeah.
Yes, he was.
Anyway, that's the epitome. Yeah. So how do we counter that? It's not by showering them with facts. But, I mean, obviously, we do have to get the facts out there, but it is through emotional programming that people have been so indoctrinated, programmed. So how do we counter that? We need to find ways. I mean, I guess pulling them out of schools is the first thing. But did you know that it's illegal to homeschool in Germany? Has been all my life, because when we went to visit our German cousins, and you know, when I was a child, I remember hearing that they have to send their children to school. There's no such thing as homeschooling there. Well, now I understand why, because they had to program them all. So anyway,
I think I've said this before, but it's worth mentioning again. I had a good friend. I still speak to him every now and again. There's not really too much reason for me to speak to him. He's a bit older than me. He was born, he's German. Born about, I think, 48. And he was raised up in the full fury of the post-war German restructured education system. And I've had a lot of chats with him. It's a very bizarre conversation, really. Here I am, a Brit, informing him. I mean, I've said things to him. I said, look, World War II is really very simple to work out. Britain begins with the letter B, and so does the word bad. Germany begins with the letter G, and so does the word good. broadly speaking, that's the truth. And he goes, no. I said, no? He said, no. No, we were very, very bad. You were, I say. He said, yes. We wanted to take over the world. I then burst out laughing. I said, you chump, we'd already done that. What do you think? What do you mean wanted to take over the world? I mean, there's a nonsense in so many areas when you look at the official stories, because nobody questions it sufficiently, they can't begin to peel the lies away. You need some energy to do it, or to be with a guide to take you through it. I mean, what we're being asked to believe about the Germans is that this highly technical, sophisticated, well-behaved, civilized people, artistically creative and architecturally skilled in so many different ways and engineering-wise, and so on and so on, and yada, 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 that we're all aware of. This people restore their nation out of a pit, make it economically strong. The Germans were on average the wealthiest people per capita by 1937, coming out of a dunghole for the whole world. No one wants to know apparently how they did this. And then they suddenly decide, I know, what we'll do is we'll wage war with Russia, the French Empire, the British Empire and America, just for fun. We'll do that. I'm supposed to believe that those are the decisions of a rational, competent people? They're not. It's a complete pack of lies. It's obvious when you look into it that Germany was forced into fighting a defensive war that it had to fight, that was obviously, you know, the conditions were set up from World War One. And because it was able to, I think there are other complications as well, and I don't think it's quite so straightforward as that, but I'm trying to give a short one for now. I think the role of Russia and Stalin is absolutely pivotal in this conflict. There's a lot of hidden information about that, and I really put him down as the main aggressor in the whole thing, but that's for another day. But this is what we're asked to believe. Bingo. You know, this is what we're asked to believe. I often see Germany as like their pet, right? They reallowed Germany to rearm because they wanted to fight. They wanted him to act as a bulwark against Stalin. Now we're getting into the more technical things. And he basically turned around and went, no, I'm not going to do that either. Although he did do it. He had to do it to protect Europe. And he did. Here's the real bizarre thing. Germany's sacrifice in stopping international communism saved Western Europe, which then did Germany in. How can you work that out?
It's Paul, that was really all round. That was about the best 7 or 8 minute summary of what happened that I've heard. That was really, really good.
Yes. You know, good. Y'all were speaking about solutions. I would say there was a great general that once said, he who defends everything defends nothing. I wanted to tell Nancy that, like when you read endless emails and stuff. But I think we need to pick out a number, not too many, of salient facts and hammer these same few facts over and over and over. Monica, you talked about there's such a broad number of facts out there, so to speak. You know, things there's endless books, endless facts about World War II, et cetera. We need to pick out, to repeat myself, a few that we can hammer over and over and over. I guess I'm repeating myself too much, because if we try to cover every single fact, I think the main point, the main idea would get lost, because people in general are not that. They're like me. They're not that intellectual, probably. But anyway, Paul, we'll be running out of time and just about probably got about a minute.
It always runs out, doesn't it, Eddie? The time always runs out.
Yes, it does.
It always runs out.
Yes, it
does. Do that.
But I can't thank you enough for coming on tonight.
I can't thank you enough for inviting me. I've really enjoyed it. It's been a great time. Technically, it's gone great. I've enjoyed every minute of it. It's always nice to talk with Monica. Monica's on the ball. She brings that authenticity because of her German heritage. Obviously, this is wonderful. And the things that she's done in the past with her videos and things, which have caused her so much fun and entertainment in her life, as we all well know.
And it's just wonderful.
It's wonderful to share the mic with you, Monica. I love it. I love it. It's fantastic. And with you too, Eddie. It's been great. Thank you.
Well, vice versa. Gee, that's just what I'm beside myself, actually. Thank you so much.
Good.
Yes, I just wanted to get all that in before I let you go. I want to tell you how much I value your friendship, how much I love you coming on. And also with Monica, and I don't care what anybody says, I'm a religious person. I know a lot of people aren't. I'm a hardcore Christian. I'm physically, mentally, spiritually saved from this destruction. I've come from, you would not believe where I've come from. To run marathons, for instance, that's another rabbit trail. But I do know, I don't just believe, I know there is divine intervention. I know that the God of the universe, Almighty God, brought Miss Monica to Blood River, and he brought us together, Paul. And there goes that music. God bless you, Paul. Thank you so much for coming on. And Miss Monica, I know you have to go. She's in great demand. But please stay in touch with me, Paul. And I will stay in touch with you.
Oh, I
might. I think I still have your email. Oh, yeah. Well, God bless you again. Thank you so much again. And Miss Monica, do well the rest of your night, whatever you got to do. And now the next people, we're getting ready to bring Jean, the bitter Ender Andrews, and my big sister, Nancy Hitt. They're going to come in on there. They're going to talk about the Nord Stream thing. Be right back, folks. Get you some coffee.